I had a wonderful morning walking from my house all the way around the campus to the monastery. All the way around the 4-mile path, the 10-mile path that I take to go to the monastery every morning for breakfast. Rex and I just had a wonderful time. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, here in Campo, California, with the Thought for Today. We haven't been having our regular Thought for Todays because we haven't been having them. But who knows, we might be having them soon again, starting right now. As I was walking on the path, I had my iPhone in my hand and my earphone in my ear, and I turned it on to some classical music. Well, mixed in with my classical music are lectures that I had given in previous years. And there was one lecture there which was a lot of, in fact, four of them were a lot of fun. And listening to them, it made me think, yes, how great that was. And some of them were when Henry was here before, as Henry is here now. And it was really quite a nice adventure. But what was the most fun thing of walking the path? Not living in the memory of the talks that I gave in previous years, but living in the now. Because every time I would say something, it would remind me to look at something. And I'd look at something in the now on my path. And pretty soon, I turned off my headset and I just listened from within. And I remembered one of the things that we had spoken. We'd spoken about Jonathan Livingston Seagull, and we'd spoken about Einstein, we'd spoken about other people who were rather outstanding people. And they were outstanding people because they did so many interesting things. They were outstanding people because they came up with a lot of things that people wanted to hear. And is that true? No, that's not true. They were outstanding people because they did what you and I can and do often, but they went the step further. They listened within, and they heard within the secrets and the magic and the things that they wanted to write about or work with, and then they acted upon it. When Einstein came up with his theory of relativity from his dream, and he looked at it in the morning when he woke up, it was written on a sheet of paper by his bed, and he said, "What the heck is this?" He had no idea, even though that was foremost on his mind. And so then he said, "All right, I know that I know that I know that I and me knows the answer." Was it something like that, you know? So he said, "I know what that is." And he didn't know what that was. But he probed his inner consciousness to reveal to him what he knew already, but he didn't know that he knew because he had not opened his heart and mind to it. Then it was revealed to him. And the theory of relativity, which to everyone else is quite confusing and quite comprehensive and profound to the nth degree, to him was a piece of cake. So he presented it to the world. Now, that's a naughty thing to do. That's a naughty thing to do, to take our dreams, our ideas, which are profound, and present them to the world. Because how are we going to explain to the world what these things mean? How are you going to explain to the world what the theory of relativity means? Now, in his explanation of the theory of relativity, it was a simple, down-to-earth comment on how the world is in a relative state, in its absolute context. You say, "Wow, that really reaches out. That really is comprehensive." And yes, it is. But think about it. Think about it. You have the relative state, which is the only thing that we can know. But the relative state doesn't exist just in the relative state. The relative state exists in its absolute comprehension, in its absolute framework. Now, what is the absolute framework? Well, that is what Einstein was attempting to point out with his theory of relativity. He was giving the principle of the absolute through the theory of relativity, and no one has caught on to it yet. No one has caught on to it yet because everybody is playing the game of the theory of relativity. And they don't realize that the theory of relativity would have no basis, no reason for being, if it did not dwell in some much larger, grander focus, some much larger, grander possibility of like absolute, whatever that may entail. And so Einstein had a pretty good idea on this. And Einstein, I like his moxie. People would come up to Einstein and say, "I don't agree with you." And Einstein said, "Good, prove me wrong." "I don't bother proving me wrong because I believe I'm right. Now, if you can prove me wrong, then I'll say, okay, I'll reconsider that." But nobody can prove him wrong. They tried to prove him wrong, and he said, "Okay, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong." But he knew he was right. He agreed with his adversary quickly. And the next moment, so to speak, in historical time, people turned around and said, "He was great. He's wonderful. He's fantastic." You see, when we believe in ourselves, we don't have to fight for it. We just present it and go on with our life. Mozart didn't say, "This is the greatest piece I've ever written." He didn't say that at all. He didn't even say he liked it. He created whatever he did, and then he went on to the next piece. Oh, yes, it was his creation. Yes, he had learned from the very outset of his musical career to memorize list of music that he wanted to know. He learned to do that. He had his list of music that he could play at a moment's notice. And he could also play his own music. But he also found out that it was very difficult to play his own music as well as anybody else's, because he was always reinterpreting it from the greater scope of that magical musician that was within him, that was hearing it from a different point of view. Now, the music that Mozart wrote was music for his heart, okay? It was absolutely without fault. He wrote it down, letter perfect, absolutely without an eraser. But that was music that was played in his heart, that was played on that perfect instrument which his hearing gave him the opportunity to hear, whether he was deaf Beethoven or live Mozart. He had that instrument within him that could hear it. Now, when an outer instrument is used, a piano, violin, or various other instruments that would play that music, it took on a different attitude. It took on a different context. It took on a different tone. It took on a different vibration. It took on a different projection. And so it wasn't his original music. If you were to say, "Mozart, is that your piece of music? On the piano, it sounds quite different than when you played it on the violin." Yes, it's the same music, but you see, every instrument wants to reproduce whatever it has to reproduce with whatever it is. As a piano would play it according to a piano, with melody. Now, what is there about a violin that we don't often think of? A violin has the ability to play perfect notes. And the violin has the ability to play every note between the perfect note and the next perfect note, whatever it may be. It has that, and that could be a thousand, a million possibilities. A violin can do that. A piano can't. A piano just plink, 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 plink. And it can harmonize and give music in that way, but it cannot do what a violin can do. So the violin brings out things that Mozart had in his heart and his soul. But there's no instrument on earth that could play like Mozart's heart, like his own soul, like his own inner being playing the music that he composed. There's no word in the English language or German language, whatever, that Einstein could use to define his theory of relativity. Because there are no words that can describe the vastness and the simplicity and the complexity and the magnificence and yet the total joy and beauty that it brings to everyone who touches it. I teach at the University of Healing principle. I say, if we will live principle, we'll be the happiest person alive. Well, how do you learn it? Well, you learn just like you learn mathematics. 2 times 2 is 4. 2 times 2 is 4. You keep repeating it, repeating it, repeating it, until all of a sudden you know how to do mathematics. You don't know how did you learn all mathematics from 2 times 2 is 4? That's the secret. But try it. If you really want to do mathematics, 2 times 2 is 4. If you really want to be a musician, do the scale. Da 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 da. Do it again and again and again. Make that scale part of your inner comprehension, part of your inner soul, part of your inner being, and then you'll begin to think, dream, act, share what that music is. And this is as Einstein, with his comprehension of the theory of relativity. There are no words that he can use to describe it, so he makes alliterations to it. He makes ideas that sort of give examples of how it might be thought about. But how it might be thought of, wow, wow, you say, and how it might be thought is so grand, but that doesn't even begin to touch the magnificence of what it is. Because there are no words, there are no phrases, there are no examples, there are no ways to say how it really is. It is so beautiful, so magnificent, so outstanding, outrageous we might say, but so beyond our thought comprehension. Now, old Henry Whitencamp is sitting over here, he's looking at me and he's saying, well, I remember when I was the Buddha, and I went under the boa tree, and I had my illumination. And he said, you know, Herb, you're right. It's hell trying to describe what I went through under that boa tree, and what I went through after I was left there in my state of illumination. How could I describe illumination to a bunch of klutzes who wanted to beat their body up, you know, who wanted to do everything in the outer, you know? And I had just visited my inner, and I'm at home there, and I'm not going to leave, and I'm going to have fun, and I'm going to live this life in the fullness and joy of it. Well, Henry, perhaps that's part of what the illumination is. That's part of what bliss is. And maybe not. But if it is, we're on the right track. If it isn't, that's a nice track too. You know? But how does Henry describe bliss to us as the Buddha? The Buddha didn't do it. He never once tried to describe bliss. He only said, I want to go back and share with all of man the love that I have just found in my heart, of unconditional love for myself and for all the world. And that's what he went out to do, and that's what he did, and that's what his whole life's all about. And that's what the life of Jesus is all about. That's the life of Mozart's all about. That's the life of Einstein, Edison, all the great inventors, all the great mathematicians, all the great theologians, all the great musicians, all the great people of all time. And by great, I just mean people who listen within and let come out what will come out, whether people understand it or not, doesn't make any difference. What comes out is what? Is their understanding, their feeling. People say, well, Beethoven had to put his ear on the floor to hear the notes because he was deaf and so forth, and he couldn't do this. Hey, he had to know how to transliterate or transpose what he heard in his heart to the piano. And so he had to put his ear down on the floor to make sure that the note that he heard in his heart was the note that what the piano was giving off in the vibration. And so he felt the vibrations through the boards of the floor, and he felt the vibrations through the... Now, what a magical man to find a way of communicating where he lost one of his avenues. What a magical man. And how great each one of us is. And how many people we know in our life who lose the benefit of many of their senses, and they just go on and do other great things. A blind person becomes very sensitive. They can use a stick to walk, and they feel, and they know the density and the tension of what's going on. And they listen with their ears. They hear sounds. They hear people coming near and far. And they hear automobiles, and they hear life. And they know what's going on. They're living it. Whether they ever had sight before or not doesn't matter. Now they're living in a world of a new type of sight. Sight coming in from their ears, sight coming in from that. And in Caesar Millan teaching about his dog training, I guess is the best way to put it, what does he do? He says, if you're going to be a person who works with a dog, and that's what he's training, He says, you must act like a mother dog. A mother dog doesn't let her little dogs get away with anything. If they start acting out of line, she'll go over and nip them. She won't nip them to hurt them. She'll nip them to say, that's enough. That's enough, sweetheart. And we're taught by Caesar to use our hand as the dog's mouth and go over and just nip at the dog a little bit. We don't hurt the dog. And grab at the dog like you with your mouth. And the dog will instantly say, hey, what's the matter with you? What's going on with you? You know? And then the dog will get the idea. It's a no-no, you know? And pretty soon, the dog will do everything you want. Caesar said, dogs are naturally born to be followers as their little babies. They follow their mommy. They follow the scent of their mother. They follow the scent of the one who is in charge. And if a mother is worried, if a mother is tense, if a mother is sick, the dog takes on those worried qualities, sick qualities, and other attitudes. But this is true for all of life. You see, you take on those qualities. Does it mean you have to keep them? No. How do you change them? You change it by doing one thing. You listen within. You listen within, and the divine within, or the allness within, whatever you want to call it, reveals to you whatever the answer is that you would like to have for whatever area you're thinking of. And if you're saying, huh, there's a fork in the road up ahead, and there's three forks, which one am I supposed to take? And you just say, I know that I know that I know the divine in me knows the answer. And you drive up there and just scoot right along and take the right fork. And lo and behold, it takes you even a shorter cut than you would have taken if you had taken the place that you planned on taking. But this is how it goes when you listen within, when you tune to the divine within, when you do an Einstein and you just say to yourself, I'm getting tired of playing this theory of relativity and not having anything come out. I'm sick of it. That's the end. I now know. And then he went to sleep. And he got himself out of the way of his divine self, and the divine self revealed itself to him, and he even wrote it down on the piece of paper, and then he got up, and he didn't recognize it, because he wasn't used to listening within in that particular way. Oh, true, he had listened within many times before on many other things, but on that particular adventure, he hadn't been successful. Now he was successful. Now Richard Bach was successful. He heard the word Jonathan Livingston Seagull, and he thought, what the heck is that? You know. And he heard it again. But you see, Richard Bach, like so many of the rest of us, we get a big head. Once we find our way, yeah, I found it there. What made you a millionaire? What did this here? Well, hard work and so on. No. Listening within. And Richard Bach wrote his book and did a beautiful job. And then halfway through, the voice stopped talking to him because he got a big head. He thought he was superior. He thought he was better than anybody else. You know, I got this special link, you know. Mm-hmm. And the voice stopped. And it was 7 years later until the voice spoke again. And then after that, it was a long period of time before it became a bestseller. But when it was ready to become a bestseller, when Richard Bach got himself out of the way of the divine creativity within him, the book, pow! Flew. And then, after he'd written Illusions, the divine self again got lost. And he began doing things logically, reasonably. And he brought in many aspects of writing that try to be universal instead of just letting come what comes. So I say to myself today, I listen within and I speak from my heart. I speak from my very being. I do not know the answer for anybody else, but I do know the answer for myself. And I walk my path in a happy, joyous, wonderful way because I like me. And I like Rex. And the two of us have a good time together. And if he's here for his allotted 10, 12 years, that's great. Or if he's here for 18 or 1800 years, that's great. It doesn't matter, because wherever I am, the divine in me has full sway all the time, is totally in charge, and I let go and let God and have a wonderful, joyous life. And I see each of you doing the same thing. because I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.